growth, many people will simply remain outside of the economic fringes. We decided to actually reflect on a conversation relating to special economic zones. This is simply because the Center for Development and Enterprise, led by Ern Bernstein, the executive director, has indeed posed a provocative question that says, what if South Africa had a special economic zone that was special? Anne joins us now to actually take us through what that question means, what the implications might be, and what needs to be done if that is indeed the way to go. Good evening, Anne.
Hi, Kaya. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you, Anne. So you're going to be the lecturer tonight, because the first thing that we need you to articulate to us is, what exactly is a special economic zone?
Well, this is a term people use to describe a geographic area in a country where you have different rules to try and deal with what prevents investors investing in your economy. So take China, for example. Initially, they set up a special zone around Shanghai, and they had very different rules for investment so that foreign investors could come in, big multinational corporations, set up factories, and the country could learn from that experience to see what rules were required in order to attract investment. And we're saying that's what South Africa needs to learn from. We have 11 proclaimed special economic zones in South Africa, and this builds on the failed industrial development zones, just a new name and some other rules that we had before that. And we're really saying that if you think about South Africa today, the major challenge is unemployment, as you said in your introduction. And that's what we need to think hard about, and how we can change that reality for hundreds of thousands and millions of people. And at the moment, these special zones cost us a lot of money, and they basically are subsidized infrastructure and office parks. And we're saying this is not really making a big contribution to South Africa's economic development or our prospects, and that we should try out what you could call a reform zone, a policy reform zone. We have a zone at the moment called Kuga, where we have enormous sunk investment. We have an underutilized port, and it's an underutilized zone. And we're saying let's make it a special zone with rules that we hope will attract investors in factories for providing jobs for low-skilled or semi-skilled people, or for export. And that this might be a worthwhile experiment for South Africa to undertake.
Thank you for that explanation, Anne. I mean, as you mentioned, the special economic zones as they exist, whatever their flaws are actually a successor to the other concept that used to exist, the industrial development zones. What happened to those?
Well, the government, many academics, my own organization, and then the government looked at those zones and decided that they really weren't working at all. They weren't attracting new investment. And one of the things you have to think about with a zone, you're providing subsidies to firms in that zone. You have to say, would those factories or businesses exist if we didn't have the zone? What added value is the zone giving the country, because it's costing us quite a lot of money? And we're saying we're not convinced at the moment, and that we should try something new that actually focuses on employment, because the current zones aren't focused on employment.
And I think, you know, the tragedy of that is that once all the effort has been put in and creating these, and then the outcomes are not what's desirable, you'd assume that even at the conceptualization stage, somebody would have said, look, this is what you think must happen. This is how we want to put it together. But should X not happen, this is what option two is, that still makes the entire exercise viable. Surely nobody walks in and simply gambles and says, I hope that the sun rises tomorrow, and if the sun rises tomorrow, the entire thing collapses. What exactly was it about these industrial development zones that actually just didn't respond to the changing tides of time, to the changing market trends, and whatever else may have influenced that their performance?
Well, look, happened all over the world, and the fact is that most of these zones fail in many other countries. So we're not alone. From Nigeria to India to many other places, many zones fail. Why do they fail? Well, firstly, most of them are not very special. They don't deal with the key constraints that prevent your economy attracting investors in the first place, because they're hard to deal with. So most zones are not special enough, so you don't attract new investors. Secondly, many people think, gee, we'll have a zone and it will help deal with the underdevelopment in the rural areas or places that aren't getting development, and somehow we will magically build something and we will attract investors. But, you know, the amount of money you would have to put in to attract new investors and get new economic growth happening is just way too much. So most zones, if they're successful, have to be near a port. And in many cases around the world, from Mauritius to China to other places, they have developed these zones as special places to attract investors who then export their products into global value chains. But that's not what South Africa's done. And then the politics becomes everybody wants a zone, and every province wants a zone or two zones, and there's no reason why they should succeed. So the politics is a factor. Paul Romer, the Nobel Prize winner, has said that what happens is you get a zone, you give the factories or the businesses in that zone special incentives, and then they want to protect that benefit, and they become an entrenched elite. And that's not what we want in South Africa at all. So we're saying, let's learn from the international experience. Let's learn from our own experience. If you and I, Kaya, were to ask 100 business people, what prevents you expanding your factory or investing in South Africa, I would really be surprised if they said you don't have enough subsidized infrastructure and office space or factory space. They talk about other things. They talk about electricity. They talk about water. They talk about the labor market. And we're saying let's experiment with one zone to test. Maybe CD is wrong, but we're saying let's test one zone designed to maximize employment for unskilled or semi-skilled workers, which is what has been done all over the world, and let's see if we can attract investors to make sort of low-skilled products for export.
And you refer to a proximity to a port as being one of the key variables in making such zones viable. Is this premised on the idea that you probably want to create particular products, you want to manufacture products for the export market? Is that why the proximity to a port will be regarded as a key variable?
Yes, that's generally been the factor all over the world, and that's what we're saying South Africa should try. You know, if you think of South Africa, we've got a small domestic market. If we were to export and find export markets, we can expand the potential for growth and job creation. We're also saying that you need to have imports coming into these zones, whatever imports they need that are duty-free, and you need to then have, you know, very efficient logistical chains to get the exports out. And one of the things we're saying as well is that to have a zone like this, which we're suggesting should be at Kucha, is you need to protect other firms in our economy from unfair playing rules. So at the moment, that's not what we're doing with our zones, but the proposal we're making is we're saying there should only be new firms set up in this kind of zone, the one we're suggesting at Kucha, and they should only develop products for the export market so that it helps protect the rest of the economy. And we're saying let's test this out as an experiment, because this is very similar to what has worked in many, many other countries. And there's a reason South Africa is one of the countries with the deepest unemployment problem in the world. And it's not by a little bit, but it's by a large measure. And we're saying this is the country's biggest challenge. We've got to do something. We can't keep having the same conversation year after year, and the numbers of unemployed just keep going up. Before COVID, it was over 10.5 million, probably well into 11 million people by now. and the Eastern Cape, where we're suggesting this, and Nelson Mandela Bay, is the metro with the highest unemployment rate.
Sure, it's a difficult one. And one of the things that people may then want to query is whether, when we're talking about these zones, I think the term that you used was a policy reform zone, where essentially most of the normal rules and most of the pre-existing red tape would be suspended. Does that amount to a legal or regulatory utopia where essentially different rules apply only in that particular zone?
What we're saying is, let this policy reform zone have a modified labor market and migration set of rules. So the national minimum wage would apply. Basic health and safety rules would apply. But what we are saying is that collective bargaining that normally takes place and is then extended across the country in a sector, that factories should be excluded from that, and you should be allowed to negotiate at the factory level, working hours, piecework, all sorts of things that would help you get into global supply chains. So that's the labor market set of ideas. We're also saying that South Africa doesn't have much experience of participating in global value chains for very low-margin products, and we will probably need to bring in senior executives and managers who know how to manage this kind of factory and who have knowledge of global value chains and how South Africa can break into those. So that would be a second kind of rule that would be different.
In relation to the first one, and, you know, when we talk about the bargaining system that exists, a lot of people, particularly, I suppose, using the state as a reference point, would say that actually collective bargaining is useful in that it doesn't burden individual factories with the need to negotiate with N today and negotiate with Kai tomorrow and negotiate with someone the other day, in that it provides a sort of a baseline or a benchmark of what applies to everyone. And that actually frees up the time and the space for people to run businesses, for employees to do their job. So reverting away from that would actually add this additional cost of trying to deal with individual labor agreements and individual salary agreements, which is antithetical to what you're trying to achieve.
Well, the problem in South Africa is that I don't have a problem with you and I sitting down at a bargaining table and saying, this is what we're going to do, and this is what affects our kind of factory. What we have a problem with is large companies sitting down with big unions and making deals that suit them, and then asking the minister to apply all those rules, the basic conditions and the wages, to small firms, to rural firms, to firms in cities that have a cheaper standard of living than in, say, Johannesburg or Cape Town. And we're saying, this is the only way we can see us becoming competitive. And it's important to step back for a minute and say, the country has a dilemma, and it's a real one. More and more people within the ANC, as well as CDE and the high-level panel report to Parliament, the National Treasury, more and more people are saying, we have to get more low-end manufacturing into South Africa to help absorb more and more people from our unemployed. But we know that parts of the unions, parts of the ANC alliance are opposed to any change in our labor laws. So we're stuck with this dilemma, and unemployment grows and grows and grows. And it's catastrophic. It's catastrophic for the individuals, for their families, for the country. We are saying, give us space in one zone in the country to test out a modification of our labor rules without affecting the rights of other workers outside the zone. And let's see if we can get investment in low-end manufacturing that could absorb lots and lots of people. If we're wrong, we're wrong. But there aren't many other positive ideas on the table. And we're saying, give us the space to do that and see if that experiment could work. Because if it can work, then we have demonstrated that with some not major modifications to our labor rules and our labor market rules, we could get much more investment in low-skill employment. And it's important to remember, South Africa's workforce is not highly skilled. I wish it was. But we need jobs for the people we have, the workforce we have today, who come out of a bad education system and a not very good skills training system, and many of whom do not have any work experience at all and come from families and communities where nobody's working. And we're saying, let's give these people the choice to work in a factory where there are jobs appropriate to their level of skill.
And, you know, that the difficulty with that one, and I think it's been debated in multiple platforms, is that some people argue, well, it isn't much of a choice if we're saying that we know that people are desperate, opportunities do not exist, and then you provide this particular opportunity and then we call it a choice, because we suspect most people are going to sign up for it, not because they've evaluated multiple permutations on the table, but because it's the only thing on the table.
But, Kaya, that's the reality. And I would say the choice in South Africa today is to have no job at all. And we keep pretending we're going to have high-skilled, high-paying jobs, but we don't. We end up with more and more people with no jobs at all. Now, firstly, we know that more and more people apply for the Expanded Public Works Program, which does not pay the national minimum wage, than we can cope with. So we know there are people desperate for jobs. And it's important to understand, and this has happened all over the world, and there's a lot of research on this, that people tend to think that getting a job, a low skill, inevitably, well, not so low a wage, it's a national minimum wage we're proposing, that this is your end point. In fact, we're saying this is your entry point into the modern economy. You could start in a very basic job, but very soon you could be making a more complicated garment, or assembling a more complicated toy, or even a tech product, which has happened in Bangladesh. So it's the beginning of something. You can aim to be a manager of other workers. But if we keep people out of the labor force because there are no jobs appropriate to what they can do, we just have a terrible situation, and there is a reason why it's one of the worst and deepest in the world.
You know, the bargaining power of incumbents, it's something that, has always been an issue. We're seeing it even now in that the public service, the public servants, they're negotiating. In some cases, they're going as brazen as asking for, you know, double-digit increases. I saw one today where the steel sector is asking for a 15% increase. The government has said we can't afford it, and yet the unions insist that it must be done. So again, the power of the incumbents at the bargaining table seems to be much stronger than the plight of the people that aren't even in a position to negotiate a wage, let alone an increase on that wage. How do we deal with that?
A very important question. I think in all societies, you have vested interests, and South Africa is no different. What's missing in South Africa is that the national government is not representing the national interest. And the national interest is very clear, and that affects many millions of people more than entrenched workers. So the national interest requires that South Africa find a way to start creating more and more employment. And that means we have to do something different. And the national leadership has to take some risks. I think it's significant that in the ANC policy document last year, their economic strategy document, there was a call for more low-end manufacturing and more zones that were effective in getting us into the low-end manufacturing business. So there are some people saying, let's take this risk. And we're saying, let's minimize the risk by not doing it across the whole country, but just give us one zone in Nelson Mandela Bay where we can try and see if modified rules to the labor market, which would be include the national minimum wage and include, this is the one thing we're asking for, which is that the expanded tax incentive for first-time workers applies to all workers in this zone. And let's see what happens. But, you know, if you don't try what we're suggesting, what is anybody else suggesting?
Sure. 0861-987-000 is how you can join in this conversation with Ern Bernstein from the Center for Development and Enterprise. We're deliberating on the question of economic zones. Does South Africa need another one? And if we do have another one, how different should it be from the IDZs, the industrial development zones that we've seen before, and what currently exists? So that's how you can join this conversation, 0861-987-000. You can also tweet us at PowerFM987. And one of the things that you also mentioned is the fact that within this zone, there would have to be a form of reliance in one form or another on external expertise, simply because in many cases we discover that South Africa doesn't have the right skill set. You're going to struggle to sell that in a country with high unemployment to then justify the employment of people from other countries on the basis of the skills question, because people will say, well, again, doesn't that defeat what we're trying to achieve?
Not at all. The government in 2017, the white paper on immigration said very clearly that South Africa does not have the skills we need to build this economy. So we're in this terrible situation where we have lots and lots of unemployed people, the vast majority of whom do not have many skills or any work experience, and we're desperately short of skilled people. Now, to get into global value chains, which is highly competitive in the kind of low-skill products we're talking about with very, very thin margins of profit, you need expertise. And South Africa has very little expertise in that area. Hopefully, we will train people, and that's what's happened in other countries. What happens is you get these factories started, and it has an impact on the country. You start skilling up people to work in these factories at different levels, and you get more and more factories. But South Africa is saying no to all of this and somehow thinking that we'll be different from every other country and not go through this stage of development. And the result is very clear. We've run an experiment for over 20 years where we pretend we have a high skill and we want a high-wage economy, and the result is unbelievable unemployment that just keeps growing and growing.
An experiment where the casualties are far too many people that cannot explain where their next loaf of bread is coming from. And I've got a couple of callers for you. We're going to start in Midrand with Prince. Good evening, Prince.
Good evening, Kaya.
Yes, sir.
To Anne.
Hi.
I'd like to differ with Anne. On this basis, I've seen quite a number of companies in South Africa. I actually wanted to speak on something else, but now that she spoke on skills and actually importing skills, we as a country have been importing skills. Take your IT environment, and I see that it's part of the. The IT environment is part of what is in the Minister Motsoaledi's document last that indicates that we need more IT experts. Mm. Yet you've got our universities churning out IT graduates that are not actually being taken up by our companies, not even to give them some sort of experience. However, we are taking in the Chinese, we are taking in the Indians that come in here with very little, if any experience at all, very little experience, and they actually come and train here to actually upskill themselves, and we're actually denying our local people that same opportunity for them to actually gain some experience from even with the government indicating that it would actually subsidize companies to actually make sure that these children that are leaving universities and technical schools and so forth to come into companies to work. I'll give you examples. I mean, one major example is virtually all of your telcos are bringing in a Huawei in one form or another, or the ZTEs in. And the bulk of these guys basically have your bare minimum IT skills. Mm. that we actually train, I mean, our universities actually train our students far better than these guys. However, we actually bring in these people en masse and bring them here as though they're actually better skilled than what we have here. That's the one aspect that I would like Anne to speak to when she said that we need to bring in experts.
Thank you very much, Prince. That was Prince from Midrand. Lebohang in Pretoria, good evening.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
Oh, good, brother.
I'm all right. I just wanted to just help me understand why is it that the government is actually focusing on IT deaths when there are some empty shells, empty buildings that used to be factories, because at the end of the day, they're still going to export. Isn't that wastage of money as well? And on the second point, I'm not sure with the gentleman who just called. I think the problem with our education system is that they just give a little bit of insight. We don't have, if we to go like in the medical industry, you'll find that we've got more general practitioners than people who specialize in surgery. But then at the end of the day, the degree is medicine. So when Anne is saying that we've got shortage of skills, we're talking about people who specialize in a certain department. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. That was Lebohang from Pretoria. And we will take your responses to these two callers after the news break that we're going to take now. If you want to get on, it's 0861 987.